the American Forum of the Air. WOL, in cooperation with WOR,
presents over the coast-to-coast mutual network, the American Forum of the Air. The broadcast is witnessed by a large audience assembled in the studio auditorium of the new Department of the Interior building in the nation's capital. These facilities have been extended in the interest of promoting unbiased discussion of national interest conducted by a nonpartisan organization. This forum is divided into two parts. First, a presentation of both sides of a national problem, and immediately following, an extemporaneous panel discussion. The forum is conducted by Theodore Granick, prominent attorney and educator, who will preside as chairman. Mr. Granick.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Small business of America, the little plant, the factory and shop, in hundreds of communities throughout the nation, was anxiously watching the present drive to extend business credit. Many contend that loans in large amounts have been provided through federal agencies for banks, railroads, agriculture, homeowners, and other groups, but that no similar facilities have been offered to the small businesses that constitute a large proportion of our economic system and often called the backbone of America. Recently, proposals have been made for a new credit system to aid small business, to help in stimulating recovery and restoring the flow of private investment. The need of invigorating the recovery trend was sounded by President Roosevelt in his annual message to the Congress on the State of the Union, in which he said, "We have now passed a period of internal conflict and the launching of our program of social reform. Our full energies may now be released to invigorate the processes of recovery in order to preserve our reforms and to give every man and woman who wants to work a real job at a living wage." He stated further, "The first duty of our statesmanship today is to bring capital and manpower together," adding, "The object is to put capital, private as well as public, to work." As one of the steps in this direction, bills were introduced in the Senate and House by Senator James M. Meade of New York and Congressman Robert Allen of Pennsylvania. They provide for the insurance by the Reconstruction Finance Corporation of loans made by banks to business enterprises for the purpose of enabling such enterprises to increase their productions, extend their operations, modernize their plants, and for other purposes. The sponsors of these measures maintain that small and medium-sized business enterprises in many areas throughout the country are handicapped by the difficulty in obtaining adequate capital of the type that commercial banks under present banking laws cannot very well supply. They maintain that this deficiency could be remedied through changes in banking laws or through a separate intermediate credit system. The comment most often heard in opposition is that under existing regulations, banks now can make long-term loans, and that hence the need has been met and there is no great demand. And another school of thought believes that what is necessary is to lighten the tax burden, which they say has been a serious handicap to the improvement of the financial structure of many concerns. In view of the widespread national interest in the subject, we have invited some of the nation's outstanding authorities in the field to discuss it tonight. We present first Senator James M. Meade of New York. He will be followed by Congressman Robert Luce of Massachusetts, Republican member of the House Banking and Currency Committee. Immediately following will be an informal panel discussion. Our panel members will consist of Chairman William O. Douglas of the Securities and Exchange Commission and three distinguished members of the House of Representatives: Robert G. Allen, Democrat of Pennsylvania, co-sponsor of the bill; Fred L. Crawford, Republican of Michigan; and Charles L. Gifford, Republican from Massachusetts, both members of the House Banking and Currency Committee. And now I present Senator Meade.
A most serious problem in America today is the provision of job opportunities in private enterprise. A solution of this problem has taxed the best minds of this nation and, for that matter, of the world. Tonight, I would like to refer to the perplexity of unemployment as it is affected by the ills of small business. As has been said by the chairman, small business is the lifeblood of America. In city, village, and hamlet, small enterprises employ armies of workers, and in many communities, a single plant or factory provides the only available employment. When that plant ceases to operate, tragedy and panic visits that community. Small businesses fold up for a variety of reasons, and in some instances, the inevitable cannot be averted. But investigation and experience show us that in a great many cases, the cause for small business failure is lack of ample credit, and that, my friends, can be corrected. Before the days of big business, monopoly and mass production, small industry flourished. It prospered because the local bank had faith in it and confidence in the community. Character loans were common and advances of credit were everyday occurrences without a question asked. Capital was easily available for equipment, modernization, and expansion purposes. Payrolls were met, deliveries made, and business solicited without fear or embarrassment because credit with the local bank was easily and quickly established. Today we know that that pleasant, convenient relationship between the banker and the small businessman does not exist. Character loans are no longer made. Advances of credit, when made at all, are extended in a dubious, cautious fashion. Short-term loans are virtually all that are available for the little fellow, even though 10-year credit loans satisfy the law. Adequate and easily available capital for small enterprise has become increasingly scarce. The absence of adequate credit and capital for business purposes became widely recognized during the Depression years. As a result, public agencies were created by Congress to extend loans to industry, the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, and the Federal Reserve Bank were given power and authority to examine industrial loan applications and to extend aid to those who were unable to find such assistance at their bank. These agencies are still receiving many applications, but the record fails to furnish evidence that they have been of any real significance or widespread assistance to small business. For example, I am informed that the RFC has authorized 5,000 business loans of $25,000 or less. 2,798 loan authorizations have been for $5,000 or less. 3,979 for $10,000 or less. 83% of all loan authorizations have been for $50,000 or less. While these achievements are not to be underestimated, at best, only the scantiest drops of credit and capital have filtered down to small business. The question may be asked, what is small business? How many companies in the United States may be described as a small business concern? We include all those companies having assets of less than 5 million. We find that there are approximately 400,000 small business concerns now in operation. 386,000 of these companies have assets of less than a million. In addition to these corporations, there are a vast number of business partnerships and individual proprietorships, the great majority of which fall in the class of small business concerns. If we add the millions employed by these companies, we can grasp the picture of the many groups affected. Our whole national economy is bound up in the survival and prosperity of small business. Their healthy development and progress spells the social and economic fate of hundreds of small communities. Provision of thousands of employment opportunities for our workers. A supply of raw materials and markets as well for big business. It is therefore clearly evident that we cannot ignore the ills of small business. All of the information now at hand convinces me that the major disturbance to the prosperity of small enterprise is caused by lack of available capital and advances of available credit. If it is true, as it is repeatedly indicated, that the unavailability of adequate credit is the key to the present-day financial and economic dilemma, then why should not Congress immediately take constructive legislative steps to correct this situation? It is not necessary, in my judgment, that small business be strangled for want of credit. Credit needs must be satisfied, and if credit is not loosened, we have every right to fear a continued financial malnutrition that strikes at the very heart of our nation's economy. Since existing private and public loaning agencies seem incapable of coping with the necessary credit and capital requirements of the small businessman, even though deposits are reaching a record high and our banks are bursting with idle money, It is up to Congress to find a solution to the problem. Congress found means to refinance home and farm mortgages, to extend credit to agricultural producers, to finance the construction of homes, and to finance the repair and reconstruction of homes, all on a long-term, low-interest, rate-bearing basis. That was commendable legislation. I supported it, and I believe it has proven its practicability. Nothing of consequences, however, has been done up to this time to provide better credit facilities for business and particularly for small business. Because of the urgent and alarming credit needs of business throughout the Republic, attention is riveted today on several bills that have been introduced in the House and in the Senate, which propose to extend some definite aid to the shopkeeper and the factory owner who are desperate for the lack of adequate credit facility. Representative Allen of Pennsylvania and myself are jointly sponsoring a measure which would provide for government insurance of industrial loans made by and through banks. This bill would have the Reconstruction Finance Corporation insure banks against losses they might sustain in extending loans to business for the increase of production, the expansion of operations, and the modernization of plants. We have provided extremely liberal amortization requirements and would limit the federal insurance to industrial loans of less than $200,000. We expect to amend and further liberalize several features of this bill, which we feel would serve to stimulate small business loans, and yet not to involve the expenditure of federal funds. In this connection, consideration is given to the creation of a federal intermediate credit administration plan, which would call for the setting up of an administrator who would be responsible for the operation of the program. Under this plan, national intermediate credit associations would be established, and the agency would insure the credit association against loss on loans made to established business concerns. To be eligible for insurance, a loan would have to involve a principal obligation not in excess of $1 million. The loan would have to be amortized within 10 years through periodic payments, which would be quarterly unless otherwise approved by the administrator. The loan would bear interest not in excess of 6% per annum. Insurance would be granted for loans to persons, firms, associations, corporations, schools, hospitals, hotels, and similar institutions, providing the loans were for the purpose of acquiring, altering, repairing, or improving real or personal property to be used in connection with business for working capital, for acquisition by the borrower, or for funding existing indebtedness of the business. Every loan over $10,000 would require the approval of the administrator, who would consider the possibility for increased employment as a result of the loan. Further provisions of this proposal are now being worked out, which will include regulations under the intermediate credit associations so that they may operate. They will be incorporated and would borrow money through the issuance of debentures, although such debentures might not exceed, in the aggregate, 10 times the amount of its unimpaired paid-up capital and surplus after required reserves for bad debt had been set up. Funds of the intermediate credit associations might be invested in loans or in bonds of or guaranteed by the United States. They would have full power to liquidate any collateral received by them. It is likely that Representative Allen and myself will sponsor further legislation along the lines I have just mentioned, and that it will be introduced for consideration by the committees within the next few days. Another attractive proposal has been advanced by Senator Pepper of Florida, which would establish regional industrial credit banks to furnish additional direct credit and capital facilities for business purposes. He would provide liberal terms for the extension of such loans, not dissimilar to the procedure now employed by the Federal Land Bank in making loans for the refinancing of farm mortgages. Senator Logan of Kentucky is likewise sponsoring legislation for the establishment of intermediate credit banks to make industrial loans.
Representative Allen and myself are developing still another measure which would provide for the organization of bank affiliates, expressly set up to extend loans to industry. This is merely for the consideration of the committee. And the committee, my friends, will have the responsibility in perfecting the legislation. These are some of the legislative suggestions that are being made to assist business in the United States. They demonstrate that Congress is becoming vitally concerned with the provision of more adequate credit facilities for small enterprise, to protect existing employment, to provide job opportunities, to render security and prosperity to our cities and villages, and to aid in the improvement of our entire national economy. Positive measures must be taken at an early date to provide easier industrial credit, for it is a vital need of small business. If we can lend practical assistance of this nature to the small businessman, we shall spur on prosperity to all classes of our people.
Thank you, Senator Meade. You are listening to the American Forum of the Air, presenting a discussion on financing small business. And now we present Congressman Robert Luce.
In considering the subject of federal loans to small business enterprises, I am speaking not only as a legislator, but also as myself a businessman who has made his living mainly from a small business through many years. Started 15 years ago, now employs about 100 persons. It began with a capital of $25 and occupied half of a small room and used half the time of one office boy. I may be presumed to know the needs of small business. These needs were sharply brought to the attention of Congress with the Depression, when the Depression that reached bottom 6 years ago led to appealing requests for help from every direction. After the most sympathetic consideration, we decided we could not wisely grant these requests for reasons that apply to Senator Meade's proposal and that of Mr. Allen. Through a century and more, the country had built up in the shape of banks a money lending system that grew in response to the demand for business credit. It was in the hands of men who made it their life work. Their profit came from lending wisely. Therein they prospered according to their wisdom. For the greater part of them made no unreasonable profit, which would indicate that their gains did not greatly exceed their losses and the cost of doing business. We did not believe an agency of the government would do any better, and was likely to do worse. There had come a period of great business depression. Banks suffered like everybody else. Many of them had to close their doors. From 1929 to 1933, more than 9,000 of them went out of business. But there were 15,000 that remained, which could survive only by lending money. Senator Meade can defend his bill only by showing that there are today not enough of them, or that they will not meet the need he so forcefully describes. If there are not enough of them, his bill will not create any privately owned banks. Therefore, his proposal will, in practice, have to be supported by the contention that they do not meet the demand. The complaint of the small businessman was that the small businessman was needing working capital is chiefly that the banks having the money will not lend to him or will lend only on exorbitant terms. He says that if not refused outright, he will be asked to put up more security than he can afford or pay excessive interest. The charge itself shows the reason explains the justification, tells why the government ought not to enter this field. As with life insurance, the greater the hazard, the more must be collected, or the insurance refused. Business is a hazardous occupation. The number of men who engage in business and do not last is lamentable. Usually the personal factor decides. Generally, lack of the management faculty brings failure. Any one of a score of mental or physical disabilities ends the enterprise. It is not the idea, nor the invention, nor the ambition, nor the purpose that brings failure, but it is the man himself. Furthermore, the life of the man himself is precarious. In small businesses, whether industry or trade, commonly one man is the leader, the saving genius, the very soul. In the small business, no matter whether it is partnership or corporation, let that one man become ill or die. Whoever takes over the loud flood of management may be unequal to its demand. The small businessman may or may not be able to meet the changes brought by the passing years. There are changes brought by fashion, by the character of surroundings, neighborhoods, by inventions, particularly by competition. I have seen 20 or 30 of my own competitors go out of the picture, have bought the remains of half a dozen. There are in our great cities big shops that make much money by selling nothing but bankrupt stock. Senator Meade proposes to meet all this by the requirement of what seems on the face to be ample security on loan, namely a real estate or chattel mortgage on property at least a quarter more in value than the amount loaned, and requiring reduction of the loan by what is called amortization, by which is meant regular payments in reduction of the principal. I commend these provisions, but I doubt if with them there will be any loans. The probabilities of more than 4% interest might attract some borrowers. Rather, I should say less than 4% of interest might attract some borrowers who thereby would gain a little over borrowing from a bank, but not enough of them to warrant a new government activity. There should be no more of such activities unless there be demonstrated great need thereof in fields not now covered by private enterprise. It is time to stop experimenting by government activities. Surely we have had enough of that in the last 6 years. Whether any or part or all of the experiments aimed at recovery in the 4 years after the first collapse of business have been successful, the relapse of a year and a half ago should give pause to the dreamers. We should now give established institutions a chance to see what they make and can do if left alone. Senator Meade's bill contemplates that the life of this new experiment shall be limited to 2 years. Many of the Depression experiments that have not now lifted the public debt to $40,000 million and have swollen the administration army of the government tremendously were begun with a time limit. We in Congress are at this very moment bombarded with demands to extend these limits for 2 years up to and or to remove them altogether. It is a case of the camel getting his neck under the tent. Once organized a new activity with a payroll, and it will fight for life. If business is to appease, let these children of depression die. Let no more be born for a while. In a report of 7 years of experience with lending to help recovery, the chairman of the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, Jesse H. Jones, says that it will probably have a substantially larger percentage of losses from industrial loans than from any other place. 46 of these, representing loans in the aggregate amount of $3,009,092, have already been foreclosed and the security reduced to possession. 543 loans to business, aggregating $21,427,000, are in default, and 60, aggregating $3,588,000, are in process of foreclosure, usually after several extensions and supplemental loans. This should show why the officials who handle your money have to be cautious. As much as anything else, they would like to help businessmen who are in trouble and would be glad to do anything they could conscientiously toward revival of the making and selling of goods. But they are handling your money and must do all they can to, you see, it is not lost. They would like to see men set at work, but they must not do so with betrayal of trust. They must do the best they can to protect you. It is not true that the little fellow needing credit has been overlooked. In the last 12 months, to them have in half the cases, loans to them have in half the cases been for $5,000 or less. Of all the loans made to business by the RFC, 53%, a little more than half, have been for $10,000 or less. All told, nearly $450,000 has been lent to business. These figures, by the way, are fresh from the press at the hands of Mr. Jones, reviewing the 7 years' life of the administration. With plenty of money left, why ask for more legislation? What small business needs most is not to borrow money now, but to be allowed to make money. Its burden of taxes is the chief obstacle. The business in which I am concerned has had that burden increased fivefold in 4 years. Yet Congress hesitates to relieve it by as much as a dollar, and the total of appropriations this year will be larger than ever before. They say the profits of business, small and large, will make it all up when times are better. Before that comes, many small businesses will not need to borrow. They will be dead. Viewing this proposal in its broadest aspect, we find it to be akin to a large group of proposals that through the last 6 years have been resorted to for the relief of suffering and the restoration of prosperity. They are defended with the argument that it is the province of government to advance the general welfare by aid to parts, to fractions of its people. This is called a paternal form of government. In extreme form, it is known as socialism. It was not the kind of government conceived as best by our fathers. They believed we should be most prosperous and happiest if every man were allowed to work out his own salvation, provided he did not injure his neighbor. For one, I believe they were right. To my mind, the history of a century and a half has proved they were right. Every step we take in the other direction endangers. It is one more step towards Stalin and Mussolini and Hitler. It may seem to be of itself a harmless step, but it weakens by that much self-reliance. Proclaimed as emergency palliative, it is nevertheless a drug that ends with fatality. Better endure momentary pain as best you can. Be sure that in the end, you will be better off.
Thank you, Congressman Luce. And this concludes part one of tonight's program.
Immediately following station identification, we will continue with the panel discussion.
This is the Coast to Coast Network of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
WOR, Newark, New Jersey.
This is the American Forum of the Air, originating in the studio auditorium of the new Department of the Interior Building in Washington, D.C. We return you to the chairman of the program, Mr. Granick.
And now for an informal roundtable discussion of the subject. Our four distinguished panel members, Chairman William O. Douglas of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and three members of the House of Representatives, Robert G. Allen of Pennsylvania, Fred L. Crawford of Michigan, and Charles L. Gifford of Massachusetts. Congressman Crawford will open the discussion.
Representative Allen of Pennsylvania, in view of the fact that you are one of the sponsors of this legislation, I wish to ask you this question. It's generally understood among practical businessmen that when money is invested in buildings and equipment, it generally adds approximately 15% fixed overhead charges to the cost of conducting the business. Now, your proposals and that of Senator Meade of New York points out that these loans should be amortized over a 10-year period. Now, if Company A, whether it be partnership, proprietorship, or a corporation, borrows, say, $200,000, the loan to be insured by the Reconstruction Finance Corporation to the bank that makes the loan to Corporation A or Company B, it would be assumed that the company did not have sufficient working capital at the time it borrowed the money. Now, if adding to plant and equipment, there is an increase in fixed charges, overhead expense, I wish you would tell us just how that company can earn sufficient money under present conditions to carry the increased overhead and at the same time set aside one-tenth of the loan, or say $20,000 per year, out of profits, in order to take up the loan at the end of the 10-year period. Will you give us some light on that, please, so that we can bring this down to a practical application?
Well, that's a long question for me to keep in my head all at once. But we're working on the theory that there can be no enduring prosperity, steady employment for labor, or profit for business without an adequate and properly directed flow of capital into business. That flow has been arrested, no one will deny. The very essence of capitalism, as I see it, is expansion and increased production, ventures into new and perhaps untried fields. With this expansion is bound to come employment, and with employment, a demand for goods. The result of legislation of this kind, in my opinion, would have a cumulative effect. It's entirely compatible with the fundamental rules and theory of capitalism as we've studied it. And with this expansion, this increased demand for products, with this increased employment, there would be a, if we could break this capital log jam, there would be an increased era of prosperity as I view it. And with this increased era of prosperity, I believe that these businessmen could look forward to reasonable profits. And I believe that in this period of expansion that they could shoulder the increased burden. As far as the limit of 10 years is concerned, in which they can amortize their loans, I'd just as soon increase it to 15, as I believe many large businesses have been financed on 15 and even 20-year loans, have they not? I believe that we should give to small business exactly the same advantages that we have given to large business through the RFC and through the regular lending agencies in private banking. At this point, if I may, I would like to dwell on a statement made by my colleague, Congressman Luce, in which he said, I commend the bill of Senator Meade, and I believe in the principles of it, but I doubt if with these provisions for real estate and chattel mortgage on property, if there would be any loans at all. Well, now, case studies prove that there is a tremendous demand for loans by small business. I have letters in my files from private banks in which they give me specific cases where they would loan money to small businessmen if they could enjoy this protection of insurance. And I have letters from many small businessmen in which they describe the necessity of obtaining loans immediately with which to expand. But my experience in that field is very limited compared to that of the gentleman who sits on my right, Mr. Douglas, chairman of the Securities Exchange Commission, and I'd like to ask him what his experience with the demand for small business has been.
Well, Mr. Congressman, under the Securities Act of 1933, companies who want to go to the public to sell their securities, whether they be bonds or notes or debentures or preferred stock or common stock, have to register them with us. That bill is known as the Truth in the Securities Act. As respects real small business, that is business that is going out for loans or for new money, not in excess of $100,000, we have certain exemptions. Certain exemptions which, if the loan or the offering of stock is $30,000 or less, is a very, very nominal thing so far as complying with any of our requirements are concerned. Those requirements then are very simple, and a person has to do practically nothing but file with us a notification that he's going to sell. As respects loans or other issues of securities between $30,000 and $100,000, there again we have set up very simple exemption rules, whereby a person seeking that amount can by and large do it, as far as we're concerned, by merely filing with us a notification and qualifying under the blue sky laws of the various states. So as respects real small business, that is business seeking loans or asking for the sale of securities of $100,000 or less, we have very little to do. They do not have to register with us. And I think that most people, when they talk about small business, are really talking about companies in that category. However, I have raised the limits a little bit for the purposes of this panel discussion, and I dipped into some of our files and took a look at some of the small companies which were making larger issues, and I took those issues between $100,000 and $1 million, and I picked for a period of about 18 months 152 of them. Now, those companies had registered with us. And this is what I found, Congressman Allen. I found that those 152 companies, and by the way, these were not promotional companies. These were going concerns, small businesses, we all know it, of all types and varieties from all parts of the country. Less than 10% of these 152 companies were able to get any investment banker to underwrite their offering. That meant that they had no assurance at the time they registered with us that they were going to get their money. We can assume that though that group of about 10% did get their money because the investment bankers gave them a firm commitment for the money. Now, as to the rest, there were about 11% of that group who failed to get a nickel. They couldn't sell any of them. And there were about 41% who failed to realize even 50% of the amount that they had offered. Now, those figures are fairly significant. It seems to me that they indicate that so far as the public market goes, the small companies, small going concerns, not promotional companies, but going concerns, have considerable difficulty in reaching the capital market. In the first place, because they do not have the benefit of the investment banking machinery, which in these days is geared up largely for the purposes of big business, not small business. And secondly, without the benefit of that investment banking machinery, they have considerable difficulty, almost insuperable obstacles towards reaching the capital market. Whether or not, Mr. Congressman, the bill that you and Senator Meade have introduced is the adequate solution to this problem, we down at the SEC have not any really informed judgment. But we do feel that the problem is an acute one, and it's a problem that in the interest of small business, which after all is the backbone of this country, must be solved.
Congressman Gifford of Massachusetts, having in mind the statements just made by Mr. Douglas, Chairman of the Securities Exchange Commission, and also the observations made by Representative Lewis from Massachusetts, wherein he quoted Mr. Jesse Jones of the RFC in a letter which came to our desk only today, will you let us have the benefit of your experience and observation with reference to the opportunity that small industries like to have under this kind of a proposal, especially when we find that companies with established earning records, such as been referred to by Mr. Douglas, are having such great difficulty in securing money, and also having in mind the strict qualifications which would probably be required by the Reconstruction Finance Corporation of each company who attempted to secure a loan under this kind of legislation, and who might have some difficulty in showing prospective earning records. Will you comment on that and any other questions that you might have in mind at this time? Please, sir.
Well, of course, the RFC today has a very easy and understandable regulation. They can make loans to small industry whenever there is a reasonable expectation that they would be repaid. It's impossible to imagine Senator Meade and Congressman Allen's bill could contain any such reasonable or easy regulation. The bills are not yet ready. It's premature to try to discuss them. The senator says that they're still working on them. The regulations in those bills would be the important item. But the RFC have 12 regional offices already. They have found it very difficult indeed to find business that should receive these loans. And Congressman Lewis has already recited to you what you all have in front of us, their experience. Now, in this unfinished state of these bills, it's unfair to comment on them. But I want briefly to discuss, if I may, the general effect of this bill. Now, hurriedly, we have loan farmers, first and second mortgages, seed loans, crop production loans, guaranteed prices, and we'll lose billions in the longer loans to cotton and other great agricultural products. We have given the RFC power to loan railroads and banks and insurance companies. We set up housing conditions. We have the FHA, the General Housing Authority, and so many of these alphabetical things that you can't possibly remember them or recite them. And now if we go into industry of all this sort of thing, I want to warn the Senator and the Congressman lest the time soon come, if it hasn't already come, when this government of ours is a glorified pawn shop. Right there, I want to comment to Mr. Douglas, the Christian Science monitor of yesterday, by one of their usual and very able writers, it says the Securities Act should be overhauled. There, what is freezing capital? Unfreezing capital means unfreezing the channel between the user of capital and the supplier. The Securities Act is one of the main freezers, and it has played its part in freezing a hard core of 10 million jobless into the American body economic. And I listened to Mr. Douglas when he said, I'll try to make us believe how easily we can register with his commission. He knows that businessmen are terribly frightened over his commission. He knows that as this paper says, why, what you have to answer in the paper to be filled out is a book of more or longer pages than Gone with the Wind.
Well, may I interrupt a minute, Mr. Congressman?
I think you ought to have a talk.
All I can say is this, that since the Securities Act was enacted in 1933, there have been successfully registered under that act approximately $15 billion. That's spelt with a B, Mr. Congressman, not an M. $15 billion of securities. Now, let me say this, Mr. Congressman.
Well, this is
when the American businessman...
Excuse me, but you're answering the letter in the Christian Science book.
What you read, Mr. Congressman.
Don't blame me for it.
I would be most pleased to hear that you dissented from the opinion expressed in the Christian Science Monitor, Mr. Congressman. What I say is this, Mr. Congressman, to you and to the Christian Science Monitor and to any others who make that statement, that when the American businessman can successfully register $15 billion of securities, the act must be a pretty good act. I could go on and point out, as respects the small business, what the so-called restrictive influence of that act is. And I could demonstrate, if we had television, charts which would prove beyond all doubt that the costs attributable to the Securities Act do not exceed 1% in all probability. That's probably a very liberal estimate, about 1%. And I could go on, I think, and show you as a result of the successful operations under the Securities Act, that if the Securities Act were repealed in toto, that it would do business more harm than it did good. One of the most important things, in my humble opinion, is public confidence. And we cannot expect people to buy securities if the promoters of the companies are unwilling to tell the truth. Of course, a lot of people are scared down at the Securities and Exchange Commission. But the honest businessman is not. The fraudulent promoter has much to fear. The honest businessman who has successfully registered $15 billion of securities has not found our regulations restrictive, as evidenced by the fact that he has been able to go through one of the biggest refunding markets in the history of this country during the last 2 years.
Mr. Douglas, may I ask you a question there? What percentage of that $15 billion represents new capital issues, and what percentage refunding issues?
About 70% represents refunding issues, and about 30% in the category of new money. But from the point of view of the restrictive influence of the Act, it costs no more and takes no more effort to register a refunding issue than it does a new money issue, or vice versa.
Mr. Douglas, the first 3 years, there wasn't 10% new business, was there?
Well, if you look at the chart on the flow of the capital through the capital markets in this country, Mr. Congressman, you will see that the curve started up at about the time when the Securities Act was passed, which to me means, among other things, this, that the day before that became law was the lowest point in the confidence of investors of this country.
Mr. Gifford, I'd like to...
You'll just let the senator butt in again, Mr. Allen. I just want to make this observation because we're getting away from the subject. Before we had these agencies that Mr. Gifford complains of, we nosedived from an annual wealth production or income of $80 billion to a low in 1932 of $34 billion. Who lost that $56 billion income?
I'd like to ask Mr. Gifford this question. If the RFC has taken such good care of this large intermediate group of businessmen, why is it that we are constantly under pressure from these small business groups to give them some kind of aid, some kind of help? They have absolutely no place to turn today. They cannot get loans for long term from commercial banks. The regular financing agencies won't fool with loans under $1 million. And what are we going to do? Just let them starve and feed them into the maw of monopoly? Because that's exactly what we're doing. And in my opinion, aid to small business today would do more good to stem the development of monopoly than any other thing. We're all anxious to assist in curbing the abuses of monopoly. And the greatest bulwark that we have against the development of monopoly, as I see it, is aid to the small businessman, the backbone of this nation.
Mr. Lewis of Massachusetts, will you comment?
The RFC has $150 million at its command to do the work that you contemplate doing by your bill.
Well, my only question...
I would like to answer you. Will you ask me to answer?
Well, I want to know why the RFC doesn't do it then.
You ask me. I will tell you what. They can't possibly qualify for these loans. We can't say what the applications you have and why they can't qualify, but right off the press, here's this. A joint investigation has just been conducted by the Small Business Association of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Incorporated, and the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Out of 6,000 replies to questionnaires to credit needs, about two-thirds were found by the association to show either no legitimate credit need or no sound basis for a loan. And it keeps on showing, and the rest of the article shows fully, the lack of ability to qualify. And don't blame business or investment. As a commentator said a day or two ago, when you say business won't seek orders, investment won't seek profit, he said, would squirrels hunt nuts? Squirrels won't hunt nuts if you snipe at them and take all their nuts in taxes. Especially nuts that you promised to keep for them in their old age, and he'll watch you munch them now and not save them for his old age.
Mr. Douglas, well, now Mr. Gifford's got us into a squirrel hunt. And all I want to say is that it's a misinterpretation of the purpose of this bill to say that it's a squirrel hunt or anything else. This is an attempt to feed these squirrels that they're talking about. And I'm just wondering.
Mr. Douglas, may I ask you one more question with reference to the new financing? Because after all, this legislative proposal does deal with the question of furnishing credit to small industry. And looking over the last issue of the index published by the New York Trust Company, wherein they quote figures from the Commercial and Financial Chronicle, they show that total capital securities, that's capital issues, new issues, in 1935 were only $404 million. 1936, $1,215,000,000. 1937, $1,227,000,000. And then in 1938, we dropped down to only $854 million, which is not quite 10% of the issue in 1929, and a little over 10% of the new capital issues in 1930. Now, can we As legislators and as RFC and other agencies of government make a proposition of this kind work satisfactorily and get the new capital into small industry unless small industry has a fair chance for profits on a long-term credit arrangement. Will you give us your practical thoughts on that?
I do not think that it can be expected, Mr. Congressman, unless small business gets the opportunity for profits. This is a profit system. I hope it remains a profit system. The search for profits is the thing that makes it tick. The small businessman, many of them from my own observation down at the SEC, has needed the money on a long-term basis, a basis in which he has reasonable chance of making a return on that investment and of increasing his own strength and stability. It is, in my opinion, an answer to a large fraction of the total problem of monopoly, as Congressman Allen has pointed out.
May I interpose a question here?
Right ahead, Representative Allen.
In respect to getting back to the RFC and what they can do for little business, who knows better the demands of the little businessman in a given community than the local banker? And I wish to repeat that we have frequent letters, Senator Mead and I, numerous letters in our files from local bankers showing that there is a demand for legislation of this kind, and if legislation of this kind is passed, that they will be willing to make the loans which will start the wheels of industry going in this great intermediate group.
Congressman Allen, of course they would, and they'll want all their loans insured. It'll be grand.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'm sorry our time is up. From the auditorium studio of the Department of the Interior Building in Washington, D.C., WOL, in cooperation with WOR, has just presented the American Forum of the Year. Each Sunday evening from 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, we invite you to join us to hear and, if possible, to witness this program. Tickets to the broadcast may be had by sending your request to station WOL, Washington, D.C., or to WOR, 1440 Broadway, New York City. Distribution of tickets will be made in the order of requests received. In the interest of education, Berlin Printing Company of New York and Washington has arranged to print and distribute free of charge a limited number of copies of the entire proceedings of this broadcast. Address your requests and comments to Mr. Granick, WOL, Washington, D.C. These forums are directed by Theodore Granick, prominent attorney and educator who presided as chairman tonight. This is Stephen McCormick speaking. This is the Coast to Coast Network of the Mutual Broadcasting System.
WOR, the Bamberger Broadcasting Service, Newark, New Jersey. 9 o'clock by Longines, the world's most honored watch, product of the Longines Whitnauer Watch Company.